from deep inside your radio.
So, back at the Le Show Dome, ladies and gentlemen, and we start with a buried lead. Those of you who don't know what that means, that's an item in a news story which should be the lead, the first part of the news story, but that somehow finds itself way down near the bottom, where only the sharp-eyed or the people with too much time on their hands will notice it. So, in a Washington Post story this week about the detention of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, information, I guess, from the new CIA documents that were made public this week, a very good reporter for the Washington Post, Walter Pincus, writes a very long story and buries the lead. Here we go. This is way, way, way. You need a miner's helmet to read this far down. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed told interrogators that after the September 11th attacks, his overriding priority was to strike the United States, but that he realized that a follow-on attack would be difficult because of security measures. Most of the plots, as a result, were opportunistic and limited, according to the summary. One former agency official recalled that Mohammed was once asked to write a summary of his knowledge about al-Qaeda's efforts to obtain weapons of mass destruction. The terrorist group had explored buying either an intact nuclear weapon or key components, although there is no evidence of significant progress on that front. So we knew that at some point. But opportunistic and limited, which would answer Dick Cheney. You know, 2003, Tony Blair in May, as the Iraq war was moving into its post-mission accomplished phase, Tony Blair said, well, why else would Saddam Hussein have not been forthcoming on weapons of mass destruction? There's no other possible reason. And on this broadcast, the host, I opined that, well, yeah, there's another possible reason. Maybe he's in a bad neighborhood and he doesn't want his neighbors to know how weak he is, which, as Henry Kissinger once observed in a different context, turns out to have had the added advantage of being true. So on his Fox News Sunday interview this week, Dick Cheney repeated the long-repeated chant of the Bush administration supporters. Well, why else hasn't there been a big follow-on attack since 9/11? To which opportunistic and limited would be the answer. Although, you know, maybe the other answer would be just guessing. Maybe they got a longer time frame. Maybe the fact that 8 years transpired between the first World Trade Center attack and the second means the Clinton administration did a great job too, Dick. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the Army Corps of Engineers. Because this is August 30th, this is the anniversary of the day, not that Katrina made landfall, but that New Orleans woke up to discover it was underwater. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has announced the New Bedford Fairhaven Acushnet Hurricane Barrier Project. This is not in New Orleans. Will receive nearly $1 million in stimulus funds. Stimulus funds. Compared to not a penny for the levee rebuilding in New Orleans. But this hurricane barrier provides a gated barrier spanning the New Bedford Fairhaven Harbor, as well as supplementary dikes in the New Bedford and Fairhaven areas. My favorite part of this story, however, is, the Army Corps is very big on cost-benefit ratios. It won't build anything unless there's a good cost-benefit ratio. So this New Bedford, I guess it's Massachusetts, hurricane barrier, completed in 1966 at a cost of $18.6 million. The Corps says it has prevented $20.1 million in damages. I don't know which dollars they're using for that, but in current dollars, of course, $18.6 million in 1966 would be a lot more than the $20 million it prevented. And the Corps wants another million. So it's a wash. In Plaquemine Parish, which is southeast of New Orleans and is rural, vast stretches of levee topsoil are still barren, rutted, and cracked from erosion, despite assurances by the Corps of Engineers the problem would be fixed by the middle of this hurricane season. The problem? Salt in the soil used to repair the levees 3 years ago. The salt keeps grass from growing. It's grass that armors the levee, preventing levee failures in the event of overtopping. The Corps, ladies and gentlemen, this is the United States Army Corps of Engineers. It says it did not test for salt in the soil. It did not realize why the grass was not growing, despite previous problems with salty soil in adjacent parishes. Parishes are counties, of course. The county, the parish, has been trying to get the Corps to fix the problem for the past 3 years. The Corps told the parish the problem will be fixed by the end of August. The Corps says they have grass growth on only a quarter of the problem area after hauling in dirt. John Grieshaber of the Corps says bad weather and funding. They always blame funding. Didn't have a problem getting funding in New Bedford. In many areas, the Corps has had to erect hay bale barriers to keep the topsoil out of people's yards as it washes off the levees. The pits from which the Corps took the soil to repair the damaged levees was at one point under 25 feet of salt water after the flooding in 2005. A local television station, Channel 6, asked Dr. Grieshaber of the Corps why it didn't occur to someone at the Corps that that may be a problem. Well, he said, I think that nobody really thought through it. As a result, the Corps now requires all soil used in levee construction to be tested for the presence of salt. It's a work in progress, ladies and gentlemen. And finally on that subject, this material was submitted to this broadcast in June. And anybody who's listened to this program for any length of time knows that I'm prone to be a bit skeptical about the prowess of the United States Army Corps of Engineers, as the previous story just demonstrated, as their catastrophic failure to build a hurricane protection system in New Orleans was demonstrated in 2005. So I tried to bend over backwards because of my prejudice. I called a couple of authoritative people to check this story. I said, have you read this stuff? What do you think? One is a scientist, kind of. One is a journalist, definitely. They both said, yeah, it's true, not significant. So it was not until USA Today ran the story this week that I realized, well, okay. And another public radio station here in Los Angeles has also done this story. But in case you haven't heard, huge flood control pumps installed in New Orleans after Katrina don't protect the city adequately. The Army Corps of Engineers could have saved $430 million, half a billion, in replacement costs by buying proven equipment. This, according to a federal investigation by the Office of Special Counsel, which found there was little logical justification for the Corps' decision to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on the untested hydraulic pumps, which are meant to empty the city during storm-related floods. The Corps now plans to spend almost half a billion to replace these pumps by 2012, just 5 years after they were installed. The special counsel then concludes a proven direct-drive pump design would have been less prone to corrosion and breakdowns. The counsel says direct-drive pumps could have been purchased more quickly, more reliably, and without the need for replacement. The findings were sent to President Obama on June 12th. Maybe he's checking with the same people I did. The investigation confirms serious allegations about the reliability of the pumping equipment that were raised in a whistleblower complaint 2 years ago by Corps engineer Maria Garzino. The findings raise concerns about whether a major storm could overwhelm rebuilt flood controls that the Corps set up in New Orleans. The Corps has declined to comment. Garzino was a supervisor on the pump project before she turned whistleblower. The Defense Department's Inspector General has reviewed her concerns twice, ruling each time that the pumps, though not as well tested as they could have been, were a reasonable choice and should provide adequate protection. That's so reassuring. Reasonable. Adequate. Thanks. Until they're replaced. Each time, the Special Counsel, an independent office that investigates whistleblower complaints, has disputed the Pentagon's conclusions. The Pentagon, by the way, relied on an evaluation by Parsons, an engineering firm that regularly contracts with the Pentagon raising questions about the study's independence. Hopefully I'll have an opportunity to discuss this in further depth in a future broadcast of Hello, Welcome to the Show. from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Monique, who is the board op here at the Le Show Dome, pointed out she now has a converter box to get digital television and gets them all except for Fox. Can we look into this, please? What is going on here? Dear Harry, Jeff writes, we love your show. Fall asleep to it every Sunday in Chicago. What? Wake up! We are artists and don't feel we have any money to spend on healthcare reception and news, so we get our subsidized. We got our subsidized converter boxes. I made the antenna I heard about on your show and found on the internet. I got it up and working fine in May. We got reasonable reception. But we're in the center of Chicago's north side, so why shouldn't we expect that? On the day of the switchover, we immediately lost public TV and ABC became weak and impossible to view. I often get the other public TV station in time-lapse stops and starts. One Friday last month, that same channel went blank from 3 to 9:30. When I called the station, their line was buzzy, so I knew they knew about it, but not a word was said later on any other press that I saw which acknowledged the dead air period, which went right through the news. Finally, I contacted channels 20 and 7, leaving messages asking for an explanation of what they're doing to improve reception. I received no answer as of yet from the PBS station. I did receive an email message from ABC, since you're the only person I know paying attention to this issue. Here's the copy. Jeff, thanks for contacting ABC 7 Chicago. We do appreciate questions or comments. We are regulated by the FCC. They allocated us at 4.75 kilowatts of power. For whatever their reasons were, we have requested and submitted reports to the FCC. We're waiting to hear back from them, here misspelled, on what we will be allowed to do. Since being regulated, we cannot do anything without permission. Thanks, engineering. I'll keep you informed, says Jeff. The digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen. Now, what's our friend Pakistan doing? AQ Khan is free. A Pakistani judge ruled Friday that nuclear scientist AQ Khan should be allowed freedom of movement more than 5 years after being put under house arrest for his role in a nuclear proliferation scandal. He had lodged an appeal with the high court, as the authorities had confined him to his home despite a court order lifting his house arrest last February. On that Fox News interview, former Vice President Cheney did acknowledge that AQ Khan was a major proliferator, only in the context of saying the CIA is now being having their morale destroyed by the Obama administration, so that, you know, they should be paying attention to AQ Khan instead of hiring lawyers. But moments later, he talked about North Korea as a major proliferator and said, well, Bill Clinton shouldn't have gone there to get the journalists out, because that's rewarding bad behavior. And bad behavior, like proliferating nuclear weapons technology, should carry a price tag. AQ Khan is free. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
he's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general. Oh, yeah.
Well, freedom in Pakistan is not all it's cracked up to be. Let's be... The CIA and Obama administration continue to keep secret some of the most shocking allegations involving the spy agency's interrogation program, despite the release this week of the Inspector General's report from the CIA in 2004, where he looked into those programs. Three deaths and several other detainees whose whereabouts could not be determined are those shocking allegations, according to a former senior intelligence official who has read the full unredacted version. The blacked-out portions hide the Inspector General's findings on the circumstances that led to the deaths of at least three of the detainees in the CIA's program, according to the official. Two of the men reportedly died in CIA custody in Iraq. The third died in Afghanistan. Where would you rather die in CIA custody? Hands? That'd be a fun poll, wouldn't it? The Inspector General's findings about a fourth death involving a prisoner in Afghanistan were made public in the report. A CIA contractor employee was convicted of assault in that case and is now in prison. He's a bad apple. The still-secret portions of the IG's report describe fears that the waterboarding of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed came close to killing him. He was waterboarded 183 separate times. The unredacted version of the report makes a reference to the unsafe nature of waterboarding, but makes no mention of its actual effects on Mohammed or the two others waterboarded. The ranking Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, Representative Pete Hoekstra, says he thinks more of the CIA's blacked out information would be made public. My bias would be toward transparency, he says. Also hidden from public scrutiny, according to the official, was the discovery by the CIA Inspector General, John Helgerson, that the CIA could not adequately account for several of the 100 suspected al-Qaeda members who were part of the detainee program that the CIA has always maintained was well-administered. The official said, quote, a few just got lost, and the CIA doesn't know what happened to them. Because it's an intelligence agency, you see, ladies and gentlemen. So they don't know what happened to the people in their custody. The Environmental Protection Agency should move immediately to adopt enforceable limits on the release of nutrient pollutants such as fertilizer and sewage into rivers and streams to halt the creation of dangerously low oxygen areas, dead zones, in bodies of water. And the one in the Gulf of Mexico should be the first target, according to the Environmental Protection Agency's Inspector General. We believe selecting nationally significant waters and acting to set standards for nutrients in them is a minimal first step if the EPA is to meet the requirements of the Clean Water Act, which last time I looked is a law. Critical national waters such as the Gulf of Mexico and the Mississippi River require standards that once set will affect multiple upstream states. The IG report says these states have not yet set nutrient standards for themselves. Consequently, it's the EPA's responsibility. Nutrient pollution is regulated under the Federal Clean Water Act, requiring federal and state governments to assure that rivers, streams, estuaries, and coastal waters are fishable and swimmable. The report studied states which dump enough stuff in the Mississippi that gets carried to the Gulf because excess nutrients have resulted in the Gulf having one of the largest dead zones in the world, aside from places where you and I all work. And the cost of running the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad is projected to rise in the coming years as the world's largest diplomatic mission weans itself from support it gets from the U.S. military. That, according to the State Department's acting Inspector General, Harold Geisel, isn't he Dr. Seuss? Also said an embassy office that oversees infrastructure projects worth hundreds of millions is chronically understaffed and may be unable to complete its work by May when it's supposed to go out of business. In a separate report, Geisel noted the State Department has no plans to open consulates in Iraq, despite the looming closures of provincial embassy offices as the military withdraws. Officials anticipate security expenses will contribute to the higher cost of running the embassy over the next couple of years, even as the U.S. troops withdraw. The embassy will need more than, around $2 billion each year in 2010 and 2011 for an embassy, compared with this year's estimated $1.5 billion budget. Because right now the embassy depends heavily on the military for security. I say call Black... Oh, they're not called Blackwater anymore. Call Xi, whatever they're called. Planning by Embassy Baghdad for this transition is essential, Geisel wrote. At the time of the review, although several sections of the embassy were involved in planning at the operational level, there was no overall transition plan anticipating the U.S. military drawdown and no senior-level coordinator for these activities. This report was finished in June. No overall transition plan. Sounds like the war itself. So, it's consistent. It's of a piece. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the news of the Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen, is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. A lot of news about nuclear waste this week. A radioactive particle and 2 shovels worth of radioactive waste have been found in grazing land near a nuclear power site in Great Britain for the first time. The field next to Dounreay on the Scottish coast has been earmarked for a low-level waste dump. A Scottish EPA said the particle did not represent a significant risk. However, it has requested further investigation of land surrounding the plant. The plant is being decommissioned. Livestock had previously grazed in the field, and 2 shovels worth of radioactive waste were removed from the field. More stuff came out of that plant that's being decommissioned. Particles have been found on 3 beaches used by the public, on cliff tops between the site and the shore, on the shore itself, and on the seabed. The metallic fragments of reprocessed nuclear reactor fuel are linked to a rogue historic discharge from the plant. It's a rogue historic discharge. So far, 115 particles have been recovered from the bed of the Pentland Firth. 29 were in the higher hazard category, defined by independent experts as a significant threat to health. They have sent a remotely operated vehicle to recover more than 100 fragments of spent fuel from the seabed as a part of the cleanup and shutdown of the Dunray reactor. A further 16 suspected fragments detected gave readings in the significant risk to health category, but were not retrieved. Six could not be targeted accurately, and 10 were buried deeper in the sediment than the remotely operated vehicle could recover it. I'm reaching too far to catch. Controversy over a long-term nuclear waste storage site in Germany took a new turn this week when it emerged that the former government of Chancellor Kohl had brushed over scientific objections to this nuclear waste storage plan in the 1980s. A report by a Frankfurter newspaper claimed the Kohl government had sugarcoated an expert's report saying that the underground salt dome in Lower Saxony was not, in fact, suitable for long-term storage of dangerous nuclear waste. The Kohl cabinet in 1983 put pressure on the scientists advising the government on the options for nuclear waste storage to approve the Lower Saxony site and had then paraphrased their report, making it appear more positive, apparently in an effort to save money. Well, we were trying to save money. The site has never become operational for long-term waste storage, despite some €1.5 billion having been spent on research there since 1979. A moratorium was placed on work there in 2000. The scientific objections to the site centered on concern that the sediment around the salt cave was not strong enough to prevent the escape of radiation. And a little more. It's among the nastiest substances on Earth, more than 14,000 tons of highly radioactive waste left over from the building of the nation's nuclear weapons arsenal. That's, of course, at Hanford Nuclear Reservation in Washington. There is now fear that Hanford could become the de facto dump site, along with facilities in Idaho and South Carolina, for nuclear waste after the Yucca Mountain site has been closed down. And a chance discovery by a worker involved in a nuclear cleanup has revealed a $3 bottle of kitchen spray can tackle plutonium. Also at that Dunray cleanup site, used a product called Silit Bang after seeing it on a TV commercial. One employee saw the commercial where the product is used to remove grime from a coin and suggested using it for wiping off plutonium from steel before it's cut up for removal. And that's what they're doing. They're wiping off the plutonium with something that Billy Mays would have been selling had he lived. And what are they doing with the towels used for the wiping? Oh, please. So, ladies and gentlemen, I've mentioned a couple times now the interview that Dick Cheney did on Fox News Sunday, where those questions that I posed to you about what price AQ Khan might be paying for nuclear proliferation, or why there might not have been a follow-on attack after 9/11. Those questions were not posed by interviewer Chris Wallace. One might wonder about that. And one might want to find out more. In which case, one would have to go subterranean.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president, the action-packed diary of a man who was just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney.
Confidential. I never was a summertime kind of guy. Swimsuits, suntans, mosquitoes. The whole exercise has always seemed to me like nothing more than an excuse for the non-serious minded to goof off. To me, the ideal summer vacation is 4 days at the desk, followed by 3 days of shooting at something dumber than my ex-friend Harry. This summer has been an unusual one. My first such season outside the corridors of power, since the days when my heart beat without mechanical assistance, and it hasn't been pleasant. In a way, this summer has been the time when I've had to begin spending some considerable energy on what you might call the undark side, the place where sophisticated ideas and policies go to be subjected to the brutish and vulgar indignities of public exposure. Not that there's anything wrong with semi-informed and ill-tempered mobs of like-minded patriots. I just prefer to spend my time with the other players, not the fans. But this year, out of the secure undisclosed everything, life hasn't been about my preferences. It's Lynn who prepares my meals now, not the Navy SEALs. And the difference is palpable. And one thing I don't enjoy doing with my food is palping it. This week I had a particularly public assignment, appearing on one of the Sunday morning talk shows. Sure, it's one of my least favorite things to do, right behind serving time in jail. So as part of Operation Avert Prosecution, my advisors, i.e. my daughter Liz and myself, felt that traipsing down to the Fox studio was as mandatory as blood thinner and my Diet Coke. That didn't mean I wasn't going to get a pound or two of flesh in the process. That just wouldn't be my style. Friday, 2:17 p.m.
In 3, 2...
I'm Chris Wallace. Welcome to this very special edition of Fox News Sunday.
We're just re-queuing past the opening package.
Yeah, that's great. Listen, Mr. Wallace, can we stop the tape, turn the cameras and microphones off for just a minute?
Mr. Vice President, is there anything wrong? We've just got everybody finally together here.
Yeah, there's something wrong. Little matter of ground rules. Let's kill everything, shall we?
Well, if it were up to me, of course, sir. But I think we lose this studio to Glenn Beck at 4.
Wait a minute. According to what I've been told on numerous occasions, he does his show from New York.
Yes, he does indeed. No. But the Washington Bureau feeds photos of mistreated animals down the line during his broadcast, just in case he has trouble tearing up.
You know, I'd shut everything off right about now, Mr. Wallace, before you find yourself with about 25 minutes of air that's deader than health care reform.
Jimmy?
That's a 5, everybody.
Okay, sir. What's the problem? Your phone falling out? Mic too close to your pacemaker?
Mr. Wallace, as I understand it, you're this close to catching Meet the Press in the ratings.
Well, I think we're, in the phrase you used to use, we're making good progress.
My so-called boss used to say that. It embarrassed me.
You thought it was redundant?
I thought it was an oxymoron.
Ah.
And this interview will be an important attractant for your audience.
Oh, it will. But
so it might be important to make sure your interviewee is happy.
You didn't like the bagels in the green room?
You might want to check your briefing papers, sir. I seriously doubt you'll find any indication that I'm a bagel eater. Look, Mr. Wallace, let's just make sure we understand our rules here. I'm on television to deliver a message. You're on television to be on television. You get in the way of me delivering my message. A lot of folks who care about the continued safeguarding of this country aren't going to be happy.
Well, you know, Mr. Vice President, I say this with all respect because, of course, Fox News has always had great respect for you. You know, it's in our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, I'm going to ask you some questions during the interview. That, after all, is why it's called an interview. And I think that history of respect might allay any fears that you might have.
My fears would be far more completely allayed if you choose your questions from the list my office supplied.
You know, I thought you were kidding with that.
Yeah, that's me. King of the gridiron dinner, clown prince of the nation's capital. You got that right. I'm a regular Bordat.
Okay, point well taken. But, you know, if I'm totally and visibly in the tank for you, that's bad for both of us. I mean, me more than you, I suppose, but still.
Chris, there's a Mr. Wallace in this business that I really do admire. Your dad.
Well, we all...
He's, what, in his early 90s now?
He is, and he's in amazingly great shape.
Mm-hmm. So I read from the cable traffic. Just think that so soon after losing two other giants of the industry, Mrs. Cronkite and Hewitt, be a particular shame if anything happened to Mike Wallace. Wouldn't it?
Well, it would be a shame at any time. And secondly, and frankly, sir, if I'm picking up a little bit of a threat in what you're saying, I don't think an out-of-work vice president is even in a position to...
No, that's right, Chris. I forgot. I totally lost perspective. I thought I'd spent 8 years planting people loyal to the agenda deep in the interstices of the career bureaucracy, where they nicely survived the little change in power up on the surface, and that they stood ready to do whatever, whenever. My mistake. You're right. Ask away.
Coming back.
You don't mind if I rephrase your office's question?
Oh, rephrase till the cows come home, my friend. Just rest assured that the people who care most deeply about the safety of this country will be very grateful to you. And your dad. Now, they're not good at expressing gratitude. It's not what they do, but take it from me. They'll be very concerned about your family's safety, too.
Mm-hmm.
In a good way.
Well, that's a relief because...
We're back, firing up.
Oh, and you might get somebody to put this damn earpiece back in.
Flying in. Yeah. Starting on Chris. In three, two...
I'm Chris Wallace. Welcome to a special edition of Fox News Sunday.
Yes, sir. Very special. Nothing scares a guy who thinks he's a Washington newsman like hearing the phrase cable traffic. Reminds these folks of the first CIA movie they ever saw. And the last. And a partial diary for late August 2009. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confident,
confident, confident, confident.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From Jonathan Landay of McClatchy Newspapers, who, if you go read what he wrote in the run-up to the Iraq War, tended to be right. Dateline, Baghlan-e-Jadid, Afghanistan. Taliban insurgents, not insurance, even worse, insurgents, have taken over parts of two northern provinces from which they were driven in 2001, threatening to disrupt NATO's new supply route from Central Asia and expand a war that's up till now largely been confined to Afghanistan's southern half. Violence up north has been on the rise in recent months as the Taliban and Al-Qaeda-linked foreign fighters have staged hit-and-run attacks, bombing and rocket strikes on German, Belgian, and Hungarian forces in Baghlan and neighboring Kunduz provinces. The insurgents now control three Pashtun-dominated districts in those provinces, a foothold in a region that was long considered safe. They operate checkpoints at night on the highway in the north, now a major supply route, local officials said, and are extorting money, food, and lodging from villagers. If you're extorting money, you can pay for lodging. Stupid Taliban. The Taliban want to show the world that not only can they make chaos in southern Afghanistan, but in every part of Afghanistan, said Baghlan Governor Mohammad Akbar Barakzi. This is a big problem. We don't have sufficient forces here. Really? For the U.S. commanders whose stretched forces have been unable to pacify the south and are taking record casualties, it's another looming problem. What can we do to mitigate the risk? It's a question of means, says a senior U.S. defense official who requested anonymity. Clearly, the main effort is in the south, but we can't allow other areas of the country to be destabilized. Yeah, it's such a good deal over there. Such a good idea, because nobody's failed at that before. General Sir David Richards, who took over as head of the British Army this week, warned about troop shortages in Afghanistan 3 years ago when he commanded the NATO force. I caused a bit of an upset in NATO by forcefully pointing out we had insufficient troops for the task given us, and that the international community's effort there was approaching something close to anarchy, he told the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch. So we were warned, they were warned. I think it's generally accepted that I made the very best of a bad job, including NATO, leading NATO in its first and still only traditional ground attack at brigade-plus level on a dug-in and determined enemy southwest of Kandahar, which vitally established in the minds of the Taliban that it would not succeed in using symmetric conventional tactics against us, he said. Meaning, now they're totally insurgents and guerrillas. That taught them. By the time I left Kabul, there were coherent mechanisms and concepts in place that remained the basis of the operation today, and we had charted the manner in which the Taliban might be defeated should sufficient resources be found and applied. Don't quote me any further. And finally, outside the bubble, from The Age in Australia, the number of obese young Australians undergoing gastric banding surgery has almost doubled in the past 2 years, with surgeons revealing that parents of children as young as 12 are requesting the operation. It's expected demand for the procedure among obese adolescents will soar when the results of a first-in-the-world trial in Melbourne are published in the next few months. The number of morbidly obese 15- to 24-year-olds who have gone under the knife has nearly doubled in the past financial year. All right, then. That's the cure. That's the fix. Start doing cosmetic surgery on the kids when they're 12, as opposed to, what else are we supposed to do when they're fat? Learn how to eat? News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, and now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
A Republican congresswoman apologized this week for saying that her party is looking for a great white hope to counteract President Obama's political agenda. Kansas Representative Lynn Jenkins told the Lawrence Journal World she did not intend to make a racist comment and was simply saying Republicans have been suffering in recent years and we need a bright light. Read the history of the quote, lady. Upon receiving thousands of emails and letters, CNN International has realized how serious a mistake it made and apologized for showing a map on Campbell Brown's program where large swaths of Turkey and her neighbors were labeled Kurdistan. A map, said a CNN statement. A map showed an area labeled Kurdistan. It wrongly suggested there was a country of that name. While large numbers of Kurds live in all three countries, Iran, Iraq, and Turkey, there is no state of Kurdistan. Our apologies for the mistake. Keeping them honest. Dateline Ashburn, Virginia Redskins, Washington Redskins fullback Mike Sellers has apologized for throwing the American flag to the ground during the pregame lineup introductions before Washington's preseason game against the Patriots. Sellers says he meant no disrespect to the flag on Friday night, and he did it in the heat of the moment. Sellers says he's aware of the proper conduct when it comes to the flag and should have known better, having grown up in an Army family. The Redskins have begun a routine in which the last person introduced before the game runs out of the tunnel hoisting the American flag. Sellers carried the flag to midfield, then flung it down to the 50-yard line. This thing in Taiwan refuses to die. The presidential office, you know, there was an apology for not going to the scene of the damage of the recent typhoon. Now the presidential office this week said President Ma had apologized for the inconvenience he caused during a recent visit to a typhoon-struck area by helicopter and would donate $100,000 to fund the repairs. He's sorry for not going. He's sorry for going. U.S. police have admitted they missed an opportunity to bring earlier closure to the case of abducted girl J.C. Lee Dugard. Sheriff Warren Rupp said an emergency phone call on November 30th reported that people, including young children, were living in tents in the grounds to the rear of the house where J.C. was hidden. The sheriff apologized to the victims and described the police inaction as not acceptable. By the way, missing from last week's broadcast, Lieutenant Calley of the United States Army has apologized for the My Lai massacre only 40 years after it occurred. So, of course, I waited a week to report it because what's the hurry? The St. Louis Police Department has apologized and agreed to pay a settlement to four citizens who were among potential protesters targeted in a raid just before the 2003 World Agricultural Forum in St. Louis. The citizens filed a federal lawsuit just after the forum, alleging that cops violated their civil rights in an attempt to dissuade them from participating in protests. They claim police damaged their property, performed illegal searches, and inappropriately arrested them. The six-year battle ended with settlement agreement that the St. Louis police commissioners approved. As part of the agreement, the police board issued an apology letter. The department sincerely regrets the grievances of plaintiffs, the letter says, including the extended detentions or damages of personal property of the plaintiffs, infringement of civil liberties, was not warranted by what may have transpired at protests in other cities. The department recognizes and values the importance of civil discourse. Please, Your Honor, dismiss the case. Famed British novelist Sebastian Foulkes apologized this week for any offense he has caused Muslims with his remarks about the Quran, insisting he was misquoted. I unreservedly apologize to anyone who does feel offended by comments offered in another context, he told The Guardian. I offer a simple but unqualified apology to my Muslim friends and readers for anything that has come out sounding crude or intolerant. This came a day after his interview with the Sunday Times stirred controversy after he reportedly described the Quran as a, quote, depressing book, just the rantings of a schizophrenic. He said it, I didn't, and he's saying he's sorry, don't kill him. The federal government of Australia will formally say sorry to the hundreds of thousands of people who were abused and neglected as children after being placed in institutions or foster care. Government will, by the end of the year, formally acknowledge and apologize to generations of so-called forgotten Australians and child migrants who suffered physical, emotional, and sexual abuse while in the care of government institutions, foster care, and church organizations. Families Minister Jenny Macklin said the level of abuse and neglect had been unacceptable. Minister, what's an acceptable level of abuse and neglect when you get a chance? And it was now time to issue a formal apology. And finally, Microsoft has apologized for crudely photoshopping an image on the Polish version of its website. The original photo featured three business people, one white, one black, and one Asian, smiling as they attended a meeting. It was published on Microsoft's main U.S. site to advertise the company's business productivity software. But in the version doctored to appeal to Polish customers, the black man's face was replaced with that of a white man, although the original model's hand remained clearly visible. Microsoft apologized for the race swap in a message on its official Twitter feed and said it was investigating who was responsible. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, just one more item. A new task force being created by President Obama to tackle coastal restoration in Louisiana and Mississippi will not be led by the Army Corps of Engineers, says the Louisiana Advisor on Coastal Issues. We're glad. We believe the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has proven they're incapable of leading the effort to restore coastal Louisiana. And that concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns, is what it does, next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, The Planet. Available on Mighty 104 in Berlin, available on your smartphone at Stitcher.com, available as a free download at audible.com/the show, available as a free podcast at KCRW.com. And be just like me having a Twitter feed full of inane self-promotion at LeTwits at Twitter.com. If you'd agree to join me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. And thanks as always to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist information on the broadcast, just part of what's available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.